Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome to Big Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. This is Matt Wilbur on the board. Elon Musk smokes weed, sips whiskey on Joe Rogan's podcast. No wonder we don't get guys like Elon Musk. We don't offer whiskey and weed.
We could.
That's interesting.
It's pretty much legal everywhere now. It's no big deal.
Futures down 350. Dow futures down 37. NASDAQ futures down 12. Oil up 9 cents. 10-year yield 2.89. By the way, our man at the our sports maven at the Tripoli, Gino, tells me that did we talk about this the other day? Where in baseball, if you're in the minors, you can suspend it for peeing pot, but in the majors, you don't.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
It's a little weird. Speaking of pot,
it's really weird. You would think the rules would be the same.
Yeah, I don't. Well.
So when the players' union signs off on something, that only applies to the major league players. I guess it does.
I think they must have had that carve out for themselves and didn't care about the guys pull over, which is not surprising, right? Who knows? Well, we have the jobs number today. Everybody's looking for 191, with a drop in unemployment to 3.8. The ADP disappointed just a little. So I don't know. I guess I'll take the under on that at 185. This is what economists say. We don't have any economists. It's me and you.
That's
and
you.
And now Kevin. Well, am I a noted economist just because I'm an undergrad?
Somewhat noted.
Just economical.
Yeah. He's just frugal. No, if you didn't like him, you'd say he was cheap, for God's sake.
Yeah. No. Easy, but not cheap.
Yeah. So, hey, just, you know, now that I am somehow... You know what doing the show has done to me? It's almost turned me into kind of a wandering reporter, and I do mean wandering. I have a much sharper observation of things than I used to have. Kevin, is that good or bad, by the way?
Yeah, I think it's probably on balance a good thing. It's just the kind of thing that'll make you crazy, that's all.
Yeah, well, it's well on its way. So yesterday, I dropped my jalopy, my Suburban, off of my buddies down in Orland, to get a new starter, right? Because they had put a starter in 2 years ago, and anyway, good guys, Checkpoint, and they're really good, and they're somewhere, you know, Kevin. This is, I am so bad at languages, I can't even tell what language people are speaking, much less what they're saying. That's how bad it is. So these guys speak something, and it's got to be. I don't know if it's Iranian, I don't know if it's Arabic, I have no idea, but I think it's from over there. Because that's the guy's name, seem like, so they get a lot of that business. So, I take the train out there, the Southwest service, and because I'm kind of a train bluff, why is it, the thing takes an hour to get to Orland. So, I say, no, that seems like a long time. So, it goes down that whole superstructure that runs by White Sox Park. There isn't another train anywhere, there's got to be four or five tracks. And the thing is limping along at 25, 30 miles an hour to way past White Sox Park. Why? Why can't somebody fix the friggin' tracks? I mean, it's not like there's any crossing gates. There's nothing. You're up on an overpass. And it's been there for, you know, 150 years. Why can't somebody go up there and turn those tracks into 55 mile an hour tracks? I mean, what's the big deal? You could pull 10, 12 minutes off this run. Easy. Which maybe could mean that you could get an extra train in it without having extra equipment.
I mean, it might be able to pay for itself.
Yeah, it actually could. So then, on the way back...
All right, can't do it then.
Yeah, so on the way back, I, of course, go to the Dan Ryan, and I'm going to say, without being politically incorrect, in various areas you can tell exactly who the, you know, the people who could care less about the law are. Now, in my neighborhood, it's people it's women in SUVs that blow through stop signs while they're texting. Or not that guys don't as well. But on Dan Ryan, it's pretty much all African American. I probably had 7 to 8 people go by me at least 100 miles an hour. At least. Went from 159th Street to the north side without seeing a policeman. How can that be, Kevin? How can that be? Name me another city on earth where you can go the entire expressway system without seeing a policeman.
They're busy stopping all the shootings.
No, these are state police. They're guarding the casinos, or they're checking out the women in the casinos. What are they doing? I mean, it's an embarrassment.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what the policing philosophy is. It's always interesting to see how they go about that, because I'm sure there are times when they're out setting speed traps.
Oh, I've never seen one. Never. Maybe on a Sunday morning.
I've never seen one at all.
In the suburbs,
the problem on the expressway system is that any time they do a stop, it interferes with a lot of traffic, or at least has a chance to interfere with a lot of traffic. So it makes it really, really difficult to do that. By the same token, you know, I am not a fan of speed traps at all. I don't think that's the relationship we want the police to have with average citizens. It's one thing if you're chasing after hardened criminals and then you want to do things undercover and, you know, you want to catch people. But that, you know, that is essentially, speed traps are just attacks. And, you know, I am much more in favor of the police being out and visible and driving legally themselves, and that should be, that we should be looking for that kind of a presence as deterrent to speeding rather than catching people in the act of speeding and charging them a lot of money for it. So I don't need to see the speed traps. I do need to see the police, though. I think that's important.
I'm going to say that the people in Illinois have gotten so thumb your nose at the police, and I'm not, as you know, I'm not a law and order kind of guy, but I'll tell you what. I think you need some speed traps. I mean, there's one out
against law and order.
There's one out on LaGrange Road, Willow Springs. For a while, it was a lot of the Willow Springs.
They're all over the western suburbs.
Yeah.
Speed traps are, and I agree with Kevin. Speed traps are horrific and a terrible idea. And honestly, it's the only
they're just tax. That's all. It's just tax.
That's
revenue.
All it is. And it's not only that. It's like the insurance companies almost pay for these guys, because I think I've told stories on the show before. My insurance, because I got a speeding ticket, it basically doubles for like 3 years for a freaking speeding ticket, and it's all a speed trap.
I'm not big on it.
Kevin's also right. There's no shoulder on the Dan Ryan. Where are you going to pull somebody over?
Sure.
Barely. It's going to cause an accident before it causes anything.
So 100 miles an hour is okay?
No, it's not. 100 miles an hour is not okay. And only down there where there's room for that do you see it. You don't see it up here because there's too much traffic.
Well, right. Yeah, you're going on a Kennedy.
You can't.
But
right.
People tend not to go 100 miles an hour when they see the police on the road.
I don't disagree. I'd love to see the presence. But, I mean, there's this bridge over to the Des Plaines River between Hodgkins and Western Springs. Plainly, there's no shoulder on it. There's no place that you have to go but it's a 3-lane bridge. It says 55 miles an hour, 50 miles, whatever it is. And I think it's 50. Inevitably, there'll be some guy going 75. Now, if some ass wants to come into your town and thumb your nose at your stuff, you go 30 miles over the limit, why can't you give him a ticket? What's wrong with that?
Oh, you can. Yeah, go ahead if you get someone. But the idea isn't to set yourself up to basically to run a sting operation to catch ordinary citizens.
No, I'm not.
Going 10 or 12 miles an hour, and that's what speed traps do. So yes, if by all means, if someone comes blowing by you, go get them.
Well, that's what that's why when people talk about profiling and everything, I mean, I used to drive to Ohio a lot. As a matter of fact, I'm due for a trip to see my older relatives while they're still here. You go through these Ohio areas, Kevin, there'll be a construction zone, 45 miles an hour. All the people in Ohio are so stupid, they slow down to 45 miles an hour. There's always two people pulled over in the speed trap, whatever you want to call it, construction zone, they're always from Illinois. Always from Illinois. Because people here...
Always from Illinois. Yeah, you know what, the other one you can always identify the Illinois drivers to is... when there's a lane that's going to close, you know, in a mile or in a half a mile for a construction zone, if everybody moves over when the sign says lane closing ahead, then you just kind of cruise right through. But the Illinois people insist on going right up to the end of it and then causing a clog at the end of the...
Well, one day,
right before the lane closes.
One day, Kevin,
and I see this in Indiana all the time, because now I drive to Indianapolis a lot for work. And when there's lane closures on 31, everybody gets over, and then you just kind of cruise right through. You might slow down a few miles an hour, but everybody cruises right through.
Well, one day
it's so true.
Well, the Kennedy always has more traffic than Eden's in the middle of the day, anyway. So it's always kind of backed up getting to the Kennedy. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. So if you run the left lane to the Stevenson or the Eden's, you can run all the way up to the end and then muscle your way through. Right, is what people do. So all these bleeps are doing that as I'm in the lane like Kevin's talking about. And all of a sudden I see this squad car go by me, heading right for one of these guys that like went across the solid lines, actually, where they've already split, and runs across that little, what do you want to call it, that little pie-shaped thing, where they've already split. So he goes across two solid lines. He could have given the guy like three tickets. And not that I would have, right? So what do you think the cop does? I figure finally he's going to catch one of these asses. What do you think he does?
Probably does the same thing.
Does the same thing. Cuts into the traffic without his lights on. I'm like, this is just swell. Anyway, Kevin, all kinds of crazy stuff happening. We're looking for the mole. We're doing something. I don't know what to make of all this. I don't know what the end game of this is. Do you? I mean, I can't.
Well, I don't get the mole doing the article. Is that something you want to tell them you're doing, or doesn't that kind of undermine your ability to do it?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it really does. It's a. Well, let's go
that,
back
that,
to the.
That makes no sense to me.
Let me ask as you know, I'm still deciding whether my smartphone goes in the river and I go back to the flip phone. So I'm not exactly Mr. In tune with the new world, but I will say this: it's fairly obvious to me, and I guess people call me a Luddite, that the world has changed in a lot of ways from 30 years ago. I mean, in terms of news at least being out there. I'm not saying it's good news. I'm not saying the writing's any good. And I probably would argue with somebody and say there actually isn't as much good news out there as there was 20 years ago. It's just easier to find. I mean, I think I could make
that.
There's
not that much good reporting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That was my point. And but now this thing, what's going on in the Congress with these things with this judge, I absolutely don't get it. I was talking to a guy last night, an attorney, not Greg, another guy. Do these people, is Washington, is that a motor on that place? So let me get this straight. In the last week, from what I can gather, and again, Kevin, sometimes you're better on the facts than me. From what I can gather, they give the judiciary, now they're running this thing through because they want it done by November, and I get that part because they get, you know, the two-vote advantage. So they have 100,000 things that they decide, they're not gonna, 100,000 pages of documents they're not going to give the committee. Read the Democrats. So the Democrats set up a howl, and they say, okay, 42,000 of them we'll make available in this room or something. So then Lou or somebody came in the other day and said, well, guess what? Not one Democrat showed up to read them because they're too damn lazy, and all they want to do is bleat to the press. Well, then it turns out...
Oh, no, that was me that said that, and I didn't say because they're too damn lazy. It's just because what they did is... They like the issue, but they don't really care about the outcome. They're not serious about the outcome.
Well, then it turns out that all of them were considered classified. So if you read any one of them, you couldn't refer to them in the testimony, and you couldn't even, if you referred to anyone like something was wrong with you, you were like a traitor or something. So I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding me. So that's why I think nobody went and read the damn things. So then the next day, it comes out that one of the Democrats is going to somehow go get them and drop them off in Senate like the guy did with documents a few years ago. Once they're read in the Senate record, then they're not classified. I'm sitting there thinking, do these people, don't they understand that this might have happened in the 50s and nobody knew about it and it was all some big game? Everybody sees this happen. It looks like third grade. I mean, what are we doing?
Well, it does. Have you watched any of the hearings, if you had any of it on?
I've listened to him because Larry's had him on here in the office, but I've been watching.
Because I've had the live stream on in the background while I'm working at times. And, you know, the same thing with these protesters, and they're orchestrated. This is not, this is a coordinated activity. This is not just spontaneous protesters. what do you suppose, and I'm scratching my head on the Democrats, you know, they complain about Trump acting like an idiot, and then they have these people every 10 minutes getting up and making a scene. They don't get to make their point. They just get to make noise because the security people at the Capitol building are on them immediately and escort them out. And, you know, it just looks like a giant temper tantrum. And, you know, if you're trying to run against Donald Trump and his demeanor, why is this a smart idea?
It isn't. But it appears to me as I'm
trying. Yeah, they're trying. They have what should be a slam dunk November election for them, and it's like they're doing their level best to make sure that they don't get Congress.
Well, there are people for whatever reason, and first of all, I don't know who controls the demonstrators, if there is such a thing. But I don't get the part. This guy, from what I'm reading through this notes, it appears that if he was a dog, he'd be a Jack Russell Terrier or a Rat Terrier or something. I mean, he was the guy that, the one thing that did get out was how they absolutely had to embarrass Clinton with the details of the oral sex and everything else. I mean, come on. So this guy is your, you know, for all these years out there, he's been the guy that would write the nastiest thing about somebody. I mean, you know what, think of this, Kevin, and I hope that if he's a decent guy, he gets in. But you are a slave to what you follow. And they had a decent guy they wouldn't even vote for, and with the Democrats, so that he's going to take some heat. But I want to know everything the guy said. I mean, why do you take 100,000 things of advice that he gave people? I mean, he worked for some guys that I don't like very much. I mean, he worked for a lot of the Bush guys, the Cheney guys, those kind of guys. You know, that to me was like the third wave. You know, I don't like those people. I mean, I think they sent this country back a long time, and they got us in a war we shouldn't be in. And you know, I have a problem with
I think part of it, Tom, is that they've turned over an unprecedented number of documents already, more than, for instance, Kagan and Sotomayor and combined. They've already given up more. And so this is being seen as the request for more documents as a delay tactic.
Except, Kevin?
More so than an information request.
I've been involved in some expert witness stuff.
I don't think anybody's pure in this.
I don't either, but I've been involved in some of this, and I'm way too much involved in this legal bull. I was in an expert witness case where somebody sent over 5 boxes of documents. And it was like 5 copies of somebody's tax return, which somebody even asked for. So the lawyer goes to the guy and says, look, we asked for this other stuff, and this is what they gave us. What do you mean? We just gave these guys, you know, 100,000 pages of documents. Did they even read them? Well, no, we didn't read them. We realized they were all the same tax returns in every single box. You didn't even read them. Did you go through them all? Now you want more. I mean, you can do whatever you want in these things. I mean, and I'm talking about an arbitration case. You can only imagine what these professional liars can do in. Nobody wants the ones you gave us. We want the ones you didn't give us, and why? I mean, am I right or not? I mean, this is common sense, Kevin. You and I knew that in fourth grade. Your mother'd say, no, don't give me the homework that's done. Show me the part that's not done, right? Duh.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Tom, but, I'm not buying anybody's motivation on this. And by the way, Kavanaugh, as a witness,
he's been pretty good.
Has been incredibly good.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just sort of sitting there patiently going through it, and he's real disciplined and all of that. So again, like him, don't like him, I don't care about that. But I'm just evaluating his performance as a witness, and I'd say he's really, really good. He and Merrick Garland sat on the same court, the same appeals court. Know how often they agreed?
Right, most of the time.
How often this extremist agreed with Merrick Garland?
Probably most of the time.
93%.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I'm just saying that this guy has a different background, and that he would be writing reports, and it appears to be he would always be on. He'd be writing the right wing report. I mean, I'm not, you know, or the extreme. If the thing about Clinton was any indication, the extreme. He'd be writing advice or papers for people in Congress, and that's what he did for like a real long time. Now, that's not the same as a public court record, but it's 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 almost as indicative of what his views are and things than a court guy, right? I mean, that's what he did for a long time. I mean, if I
At least to a point, you know, there is the idea that there, you know, to some extent, it's his job. So, you know, if I'm a communications director for a corporation, or you know, say I'm you know, communications director for Notre Dame Athletics, then you're going to get the party line, and you're going, and my research is going to be the research that reflects
right.
what they're trying to find, which, you know, I would like to think would be what I believe, and that I wouldn't take the job if I didn't believe it. But on the other hand,
yeah.
You know, I do realize that I'm also, you know, who's buttering the bread, so to speak.
Kevin, let me put it this way. If they would have given a vote on the guy last year and he was in there, I'd go out and I'd sneak into the panel and I'd vote this guy in. I'd sneak a vote in just to get it over with. I have no problem with it, but I do think that the what happened last year, somehow or another, there's a bad taste in everybody's mouth, and I don't know how you get that out of people's mouth, but it's somehow or another there needs to be, okay, we hit bottom here. What are the rules? The day before,
yeah, well, actually, the bad taste goes farther back.
It goes back to Robert
Bork.
Bad
taste is tied into Bork. Yep. It's tied into Clarence Thomas. So it's been war ever since those days.
Yeah,
and that's not healthy.
No, you have people that there were like 98-1 to be an appeals court person. Now they can't get in the Supreme Court.
You know, yeah, what's crazy yeah. though? What's really crazy about that is the tactic that they are doing is they're saying, well, I can't stop it, but I can bloody him along the way. Well, what good does that do? He just got a lifetime appointment.
Yeah, well,
you know that. So what you're really trying to do is you're trying to bloody the administration, and you know I don't know that translation happens.
Well, my concern, Kevin, is that, and I've mentioned this before, I have this thing about the truth that I know, you know, we have a few of us that we know that have the same fixation with it, but it's becoming a very rare commodity. I'm not saying that other people lie all the time, but I'm saying they seem to not oppose lying as much as I do. And it seems to me the last five or six people that have been put on the Supreme Court, it's going back a ways, all they do is lie. To me, they get out there. They have this meeting with a very partisan president. They come out, and everybody knows that nobody would put a tape out there of what went on behind those closed doors. And every single guy comes out there and says, "We didn't talk about anything substantive." Well, bull bleep! What were you doing in there? And anybody who watches Trump for 30 seconds, even this morning, for this guy to say they didn't talk about any potential, where you are on this subject, where you are about that subject, who you're loyal to, for them to think that Trump somehow was a Boy Scout in that meeting, how could you possibly think that? You know, and I don't know where you go with that. So a guy who's going to be put on the most hallowed spot in the country for the rest of his life starts his career out lying like a rug in front of Congress, it seems to me, which I don't have a problem with. You know, I don't know how I change it. I don't. But on both sides. I mean, it's not like the people that you know, Obama put in aren't going in there. They have an agenda. Just like these, and I don't want that. I want somebody.
Well, if they didn't have an agenda, then the contentious issues wouldn't line up on party
right.
lines so often.
That's right. That's that, and it proves to me that clearly what they told Congress is wrong. I'm at the point, Kevin, on every one of these big cases. Not everyone, because some of them are obviously, you know, they're different. Every one of these big cases, you can fire these people. You can get to this guy doing a podcast in Chicago, and I'll tell you how they're all going to vote. Except for the one guy who just left. Here's the 4-4. You know, why don't we fire him? What do we need him for if we all know how they're going to vote? The other guy who I think might be the new swing voters is Roberts, and Republicans are all pissed at him.
Well, yeah. Well, Roberts, you know, Roberts preserved Obamacare. By the way, there's an interesting case in the federal courts right now about Obamacare that Roberts ruled that Obamacare was constitutional for one reason, that it was a tax. Now that they have removed the tax,
yeah,
there's a case back in there saying, well, now you can throw it out because there's no tax.
Well, there's also the...
Which is interesting.
Well, but even so, we have everybody in this country, I mean, I'm not saying everybody, but everybody who has a real job and doesn't have a chance to pay attention to this stuff, what we're doing, Kevin, is we have our stuff we yell about. We have the right versus the left arguing about. This is all about Roe versus Wade. This is how the people, the protesters, that's why they're so far behind the times. This is not about Roe versus Wade. This is about business versus regular people. This is unions versus other. The next 10 big cases in front of the Supreme Court are all going to be about the guys who have the money keeping the money. It's going to be nothing to do with Roe versus Wade. Everybody's still fighting that battle from 1973. You can throw that one out. That's not going to be the battle. It's going to be unions.
I think it will be a battle to some extent. I don't think Roe versus Wade is going to go away.
It'll be 6 months or 5 months, or some state will have the right to say you can't have an abortion after 3 months. It'll be something like that. I agree with you.
That's where it's going to be. There's going to be scientific arguments because they know that now at 20 weeks, the survival rate, or it's like 21 or 22, I don't remember off the top of my head, but the survival rate of children born at that age is, it's not greater than 50%, but it's substantial.
Yeah.
So it's hard to argue that another argument would be, well, it's not a human life yet, there's a scientific argument that says yes.
I would agree, but it's.
So I think that's where you're going to see those battles now. You have the extremists who want to play 100% or nothing.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of people who oppose abortion who are saying, well, how many can I save?
But it's
Kevin, it's going to operate in that arena. That's where it is.
I know, but
the constituency, the NARAL constituency, and so
that's
on.
Where it is.
Gotta go.
And in the meantime, we're going to go break here. In the meantime, you're going to find your two cable companies buying. Well, somebody already bought DirecTV. Somebody else is going to buy Dish. Every single industry, there's going to be no antitrust, and these guys are going to rule for business every single time. And in 20 years from now, you're not going to recognize this place any more than you can now. And that's where these guys are going. They don't care about this other stuff. SP Futures down 3. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Miller, over on the board. Kevin O'Neill with us today. S&P futures down 3, Dow futures down 31, NASDAQ futures down 10. We're down pretty heavy. We were down real heavy in the NASDAQ yesterday, and it came back. We've had these days where every morning we've been down and we've come back near the close, but the NASDAQ has taken a hit this week, mostly the FANGs. Oil up at 16 cents, 67.93, 10-year yield 2.88, so it made that run toward 2.9 and backed off ever so slightly. Over in Europe, we're down, but not a whole lot. DAX down 22.2%, FTSE down 62.8, that's the big seller offer. Seller offer, if that's a word. Kekron down 5, call that 0.1%. Over in Asia, yeah, these guys have been having a horrible week. Nikkei down 180.8%, 22,307. Shanghai up 10.4, crept back over 2,700, 2,702. Hang Seng, after the very tumultuous week to the downside, under 27,000, only 26,973. You would think they could have crept back over 27,000. They're down a whole $1.35, so call that flat. I don't think I've ever seen those guys only move $1.35. Oil up 16 cents, Brent up 17, natural gas 2.76, RBOB 1.96, up a penny, and we have gold up ever so slightly, 320, 1207, silver up 5 cents, 1423. 21 major retailers are now worth less than Amazon combined. What do you think of that, Matty? What do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash to report, which is pretty rare for the Friday morning. Usually people behave themselves on these early Friday mornings. But out in Naperville, the Reagan Memorial, I-88 westbound at Yackley Road, there is a crash that's been moved to the left shoulder that's causing some delays as folks are heading inbound from the western suburbs. Just north of there, up near Carroll Stream, there's a crash with injuries reported. Army Trail Road at Fair Oaks as well. So a couple of issues out in the western burbs. Everything else looking okay out there. Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, normal traffic volumes. Stevenson, traffic building around Cicero, but no accidents or issues to report. Eisenhower actually looks good. Edens and Kennedy are all quiet as well. Weather today, it's going to be cool again like yesterday and rain in the forecast like yesterday as well. It'll kind of be the same forecast for the next few days here. Rainy with a high of 70, which is kind of where we're at right now. It's cloudy and 69 with rain in the area, and we'll be like this on and off for throughout the day, I should say. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 85. In sports, Cubs are in the middle of a 23-game stretch in 23 straight days, and they're now 12-5 with 6 days left, which is pretty great.
That's pretty special, actually.
Guaranteeing that they'll finish above 500 even if they lose out their final 6 games. They beat the Nats on the road last night 6-4 in 10 innings. David Bodie, who owns the Nationals late in games, pinch hit and had the go-ahead sack RBI double, I should say, scoring Albert Almora to take the lead. Cubs tacked on one more and beat the Nats 6-4. Brewers and Cardinals were both off, so the Cubs are 4.5 up on Milwaukee, 5 up on the Cardinals. White Sox were off last night. The Angels come to town tonight for a weekend series. Diamondbacks lost to the Braves 7-6 in 10 innings. And the NFL season kicked off last night. Thursday night football was kind of a dud for three quarters and then got exciting at the end. Eagles held off the Falcons to go 1-0, beating them 18-12.
Gee, both of those teams figure to be playoff, right?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, the Eagles will get Wentz back here soon, and they obviously have most of everyone back from their Super Bowl team. And Atlanta, super talented. Matt Ryan didn't look very good last night, though.
So
But you got paid a whole lot to not look very good.
Yes.
Very true.
So, Kevin, without giving or any kind of advice, value, whatever, on Amazon, as of the market closed yesterday, well, it slipped back from its $1 trillion stuff, it's worth $955.1 billion. That makes it worth more than 21 other major retailers combined, including Walmart and Costco and Home Depot and the rest of them. Now, my question to you is, just Walmart sold $500 billion in goods worldwide in 2017, more than three times as much as Amazon. Just one of the companies that it's worth 21 times, worth what all 21 of them, or more than what, sold three times as much as they did. Now, what do you think of that valuation just off the top of your head? A little scary or what?
Yeah, I don't really have an opinion, Tom. You know, because like you said, without advising, well, you know, I have way too little expertise here.
Well, I'm just saying, one obviously is considered to be a growth, and the other one just stayed old retailer, but how are you going to get from, I mean, you would think that in order for you to grow into that number, right now they're selling, well, what's a third of 500 billion? 167, right?
167.
Yeah, 167. So how are they going to go from 167 to, say, a billion six? Is that even possible? Because you would think you'd have to sell twice as much as at least one of the firms that you're worth, you know, 21 that you're worth more of. How are you going to get there? How many people are you going to push out of the way? Is it even possible to be...
Well,
in Walmart's case,
Walmart's an interesting case for competing with Amazon, because that's really what everybody's doing, is competing with Amazon at this point. Walmart is, one of the big things that Amazon's doing, let me back up a little bit, one of the big things Amazon's doing is the rapid delivery stuff now. So putting a footprint in more places, having warehouses so that they can deliver, whether they're doing groceries or whether they're doing... all the other stuff that Amazon sells, they're trying to put down a footprint there so that they can do the two-hour delivery thing. Now, you know, a lot of, I see it in the grocery stores. A lot of them are matching. Shop online, come pick up your groceries, or shop online and get your groceries delivered. And they're all charging for it, whereas Amazon's model is a standard warehousing model, where you stock shelves in the most efficient ways and you pick in the most efficient ways, whereas all these other stores, take a Meijer for instance, are sending employees up and down the aisles to shop, which is not efficient. Works well for a shopper like you and me, but it doesn't work for as a warehousing model. So Walmart's the one that's moving in that direction. They're, I think that's a lot of what's behind the Sam's Club stores shutting down, is they're being converted into warehouses so that they can do what Amazon is doing. And what that gives Walmart is scale that even Amazon doesn't have in terms of its physical footprint right now.
Well, here's my
So that's the interesting trend. Whether they can make it work or not is another issue, and start to match that kind of volume. But it's pretty interesting that that's where they are.
Well, when you look at the numbers, and that's what we do, Kevin. But you look at where Amazon started. Now, this could be. It's not like I'm an Amazon basher, because I'm not. Because I surely wish I'd have been along it the whole way up. Although it's pretty hard for me to plunk 1,000 shares of a client stock in a $2,000 stock. Unless, I wish I had. who'd your client have to be? The California teachers for you to think 1,000 shares that belongs in the portfolio. Anyway, but the point is, in my mind, Kevin, they jumped a head start by basically fleecing all these idiot states that didn't charge taxes. So
in part, that certainly mattered a lot on big ticket items.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, For Walmart, or for Amazon, it was an absolute, it was retail heaven. Kevin O'Neill would have a spot someplace. They start out with books and other stuff. You'd have a spot someplace where you had maybe just a warehouse. Somebody'd walk into the Best Buy, and this is being simple, I know. Somebody'd walk into the Best Buy, a Maddie Weber, for instance. He'd see a TV for $1,000. He'd go online, and he'd see Kevin O'Neill in Idaho selling it for $500, even $50 cheaper, and all of a sudden you're saving $100 on the tax. You ship it to them. Amazon doesn't touch anything. They don't do anything. They have a spectacular website. They have obviously some sort of a service area and then people on the phone somewhere if you call them. And all of a sudden they make $150.
No, you don't call them. You email them.
Okay, well, okay. So but I'm saying, so they basically have made $150 on something they never touched, they never owned, they never did anything. You can't get a better margin than that, Kevin. I mean, it's margin heaven, okay? Now, you can do that up to a point, and then there's something called the wheel of retailing. You start adding some services. Okay, well, gee, I'm a little bit better at this than the next guy. And all of a sudden, now you got a warehouse. You are actually touching the stuff. Now, whatever the margin is, it's not the same as the infinite margin of the first time where you never touched it and everything to it. All you did was take the check and send Kevin the order. I mean, your margin, right? I mean, so you're nudging down the margin pole, if there's such a thing. Now all of a sudden you're talking that
there was no carrying cost. Of course, Amazon wasn't getting the full retail revenue too. The revenue went to the seller, just like the expense went to the seller. Amazon just took its commission.
Right, but they were fairly low because that guy never had to do much with it either. He didn't have to have a really nice Best Buy. He didn't have to have a piece of property in the River North that cost an arm and a leg. He could be in, you know, Joliet or someplace. I mean, I'm saying, so it's not full retail either, right, to compete with the Best Buy. I mean, you're right. We're kind of splitting hairs, but my point is everything they've done since then is moving into areas where the margin is clearly not infinite, right? It's now all of a sudden we're gonna go get groceries and we're gonna have to find a place close to somebody because the tomatoes don't, you know, anything that's frozen is gonna melt. We're not going to refrigerate our trucks, I don't believe. So we have to be pretty close. Now, all of a sudden, we're down to essentially the Peapod model. And Peapod, we're not a business. You know, so clearly the margin on Peapod was not infinite at all. And Amazon, I'm sure, is going to do a better job than Peapod. But Peapod went under. It wasn't infinite at all. You know what I'm saying? As you walk down this wheel of retailing, it's the same thing as you and I 40 years ago open up the discount store where we make people bag their own crap. And all of a sudden, 3 months into it, you go, all right, we'll hire a bagger. People are bitching. And that's what's called the wheel of retailing. This is just the same thing on another scale. As you start to give more and more service to people, your margins go less and less. They always do, right? It's happened for hundreds of years. I'm just saying. You know, whatever. Hey, what about football?
You know, we're seeing a transformation. You know, yeah. How many in your lifetime, in my lifetime, what did we see? We saw the local mom and pop type of grocery store fade away and get replaced by the supermarket, and then we've seen the superstores, and we've seen the online markets, and now we're seeing the online markets go back to a more traditional warehousing model, but not a model that has been applied to the food industry.
Well, it was who are the guys? Because it's all the same, Kevin. Who are the guys that my brother worked for a while? They were the catalog company, but when you showed up, they gave you your delivery. What were those guys' name? Well, it's going back about 35 years. McDade's. Remember those guys? You ordered by telephone.
I wouldn't have come up with it myself. Yeah.
Dan worked there. He was, talk about a guy who was a master at putting like a picnic table on the roof of your Ford Falcon. I don't know how, Dan could have been a rigger. He's been president of PTI Securities. He'd get stuff on the roof of cars. I mean, he just got really good at it because people show up and they'd pay him a couple of bucks. Some guy would like order God knows what. He'd show up like at a Ford Fairlane or something to take it home. and they'd have a couple of guys that put the thing on the guy's roof or something, and off he'd go. But that was the Amazon of the day. You had a catalog, you called in, and they said it'll be ready at 3 o'clock. You walked in and there's 50 items there for delivery, and this one's yours, and they hand it to you. There was no stocking at the store. There was none of that stuff. So I mean, there's been iterations of this in our whole lifetime, right? I mean, the first one of those things I ever saw was Steinberg Bomb. Remember those guys? Then there was the warehouse.
The name's familiar. Yeah. I don't remember anything about them.
Then it was who was the first? Adventure? They were huge.
I remember Adventure.
But I mean, it's all kind of, anyway. Let's talk about some football. 34 points against Ball State. I don't want to bet against them, but I can't take that 34 points.
I wouldn't take that bet because I didn't see enough out of Notre Dame's offense to think that there's going to be any consistency there.
What about
Would you take Ball State?
So they could win comfortably and still only win by 30 or 28 or something like that.
I wouldn't bet against them, Maddie, because that's not what I do. But if I was a betting man, there's no doubt I'd take Ball State. Just saying.
There you go.
Yeah, but you know, that's also a game that could turn into a 55-7 game or something. I wouldn't touch it. You know, I might look at overs or unders or, you know, something like that on it, but I don't think I would touch the point spread.
I was when I was younger than you, Maddie. Can you imagine that? I used to go to Vegas a lot, and it was
a long time ago.
Yeah, and it was a guy that wrote this column on sports betting. He said, "Don't be an idiot. Don't take the 45 points. Don't ever let your bet be hanging on whether the third string decides they need another touchdown or if the coach figures he needs to cover the spread." He says, "Find a game where there's two teams playing that are even, the bet's almost even, and pick the team you think is going to win and bet it."
Yeah, I would say most people would agree with that.
He goes, "Never." That way you never have to worry about motivation. You never have to worry about anything. You know they're trying to win. Pick the winner. So I'm just saying. I've remembered that to this day. Now, it doesn't mean I've always done that, but anyway. So we got
to
find
out. Hey, I have a quickie baseball note for you. It looks like the Orioles are going to win the race to 100.
Really?
They have 99 losses, and Boston has only 97 wins. So I think the first team to 100 of either wins or losses is looking good for the Orioles.
Well, we have Josh going to be on a little bit here. We'll ask him, is there a consensus, you know, is there a Roy Hobbs number one that's dying to go number one in this Major League Baseball draft? It doesn't usually seem to be. There's always like 10, 20 guys that are pretty good. I mean, they're all good.
Oh, there's a lot of guys that are pretty good and a lot of guys that will succeed. But, I think there is often the guy that everybody would like.
Well, but is he?
And the question is always is how far away is the guy? So, you know, when you draft a guy out of, you know, who's played in college for 3 years, it's the Billy Beane theory. You have a pretty good idea of the type of player that's going to be. You know, is there plate discipline, all those kinds of things. You have 3 more years to learn that stuff. Whereas in high school, usually the guys that have major league talent are so much better than everybody else that you really can't tell about them. You can't tell what kind of player it is. And many of the smaller things, and as a result, you may be getting an incredibly talented guy. But if you're 5 years away or 6 years, you know, whatever number of years it's going to take the guy to make the major leagues, and you're still not sure, that's where it becomes a bit of a crapshoot. So I don't know who it is. You notice that the White Sox have taken a lot of pitchers over the years, and almost every one of them has been a college pitcher. You know, Carlos Rodon or you know, someone like that, because they have a pretty darn good idea of what they're getting at that point. The only other question is, has the guy gotten his Tommy John surgery out of the way or not?
Well, that's what I was just kind of leading into. I forget who the dude's name was, but somebody, the last Olympics that had baseball was, what, Sydney? I'm going to say. Is that a fair assessment? The Sox drafted a pitcher, and I forget the guy's name. I'm going to say he was 6'8", 6'9". He was going to be the next Randy Johnson. He dominated the Olympics, I think. It's a little fuzzy, but the Sox got him, and he evidently had basically pissed away his arm somewhere in the Olympics or before. Mark Pryor. He pitched so much for Southern Cal?
Yep.
in the World Series. Who knows what juice he was on. Cubs get him. They had to shut him down from June. A 22-year-old kid. You got to shut him down in June. You can't even rest him for 3 weeks to have him pitch. So to say he was overpitched, Kerry Wood, the Cubs drafted him. This is the greatest trivia question in sports. How many pitches did Kerry Wood throw the day that they drafted him? And it was like 140. He pitched the whole seven-inning game, and they brought him in relief in the doubleheader in the afternoon because it was a rainout or something. Now, how do you judge the care and feeding of a pitcher now even Little League, there's amount of pitches per week and so forth, but still it's not the same as the kind of pitcher. In other words, how do you judge a coach whether or not he actually gives a rat's behind about his pitcher graduating him in an arm left, or does he just want to go to the College World Series, or, you know what I'm saying, Kevin?
Well, in college you don't get nearly as much abuse because you pretty much pitch once a week. You start once a week. Now you may get to the College World Series, and it's a tournament, or you get anywhere in the NCAA tournament, and then you can overuse a guy. But it's not long term overuse, because generally what you're going to do, the model is you play your conference games on the weekends, and so you get one starter for each game. You usually play three, and you get one starter for each game. And then during the week, you play some local team that can bus over to your stadium, and that's where your freshmen pitch. So I don't think you get the same abuse in college. I think where the problem lies is in high school, and it's not just high school. The high school coach, it's that the pitcher generally pitches, you know, like a lot of players. He's on two or three different teams, and there's no coordination
right.
between them. So the guy winds up pitching, you know, four times in a week on a regular basis, or three times in a week on a regular basis, and nobody is monitoring the cumulative number of innings he pitches. I think that's where the abuse went.
I'm gonna somewhere back in my fuzzy brain, which of course is probably wrong. Maddie might be able to find this. I'm gonna say that Mark Pryor started 30 games his senior year, something along those lines. By the time they
I don't know. I'd have to. We'd have to go look it up.
Yeah. Because I know the minute the Cubs drafted him, they shut him down, which is strange. Anyway, so
and you get that. Speaking of pitchers and Tommy John surgery, how about Ohtani? They're telling him he needs Tommy John surgery, so okay, well, you can DH in the meantime.
Yeah.
He goes out and has like a forehead game.
Well, what a talent, huh?
Yeah, what an incredible talent. But the question is, if he has the surgery in the off season, will he? At what point will he be able to hit next year? Even if he can't pitch.
Well, even if he's going to play outfield the rest of his life, he needs to get fixed.
He needs to get fixed. The recovery time for playing outfield isn't the same. But I'm even thinking, you know, if he gets the surgery in the off season, he may not be ready to pitch, you know, to throw at all until June. Is he going to? But I don't know when you're ready to swing the bat once you've had that surgery on your elbow.
I don't either. I mean, the guy from...
I don't think anybody's ever cared before.
Well, actually, the only position player that, you know, and this is showing my ignorance, I'm going to say the only position player I've ever even heard getting it is the shortstop on the Dodgers. I'm sure there have been a few others.
I wonder if he was ever a pitcher in his background.
Is this, after all this time, I should know this, is this caused by throwing too hard or throwing too many curveballs or something? How is it, guys? That
that's a good Josh question. It's probably, you know, and I don't remember. I read it so long ago. That's probably we're in Jeff Passan's book, The Arm. I'll have to pull that out and check.
I still think one of the most fascinating things, and I wonder if we could write to the Tribune to see if they have this go back a long time, where the guy did the entire analysis of the baseball pitch, and he for somehow or another the Tribune for a period of time. This was in the 80s because I was on the trading floor. Like once a month, they got a whole back page of the sports section, and they wrote these incredible articles with pictures and everything of how a sprinter sprints, and then it was how a baseball pitcher pitches. And if you don't pitch, you see it in a lot of relievers now that throw real hard, and that's why this guy in the Cubs, you know, Morrow, he pitches 32 innings and his elbows, he got a stress fracture or something. This guy, he drew diagrams that if you don't pitch when you stride toward the plate, your foot is supposed to be pointed directly toward the plate, and you should be able to draw a line, say you're a righty, from your right arm coming over the top or wherever you come from, all the way through both shoulder blades, all the way down to your left arm. The line should be perfectly straight. And if it is, you put very little stress on what is a pretty easily to put stress on joint, which is the shoulders, because there's like 17 muscles in the shoulders. And if you don't balance it exactly correctly, you're going to have a problem at some point, unless you're a relief pitcher, where you pitch one inning or something. So he actually predicted, this is when Arl Hershiser was burning up the league. He was slightly under. So he said he will have a shoulder problem, and somebody else was slightly over and said he will have an elbow problem. In that same year, like 9 months, the guy was spot on. Didn't Hershiser have to have shoulder surgery? Whoever this other guy was, that whatever it was, the other guy, or maybe it was Hershiser, had to. But and he said the two people that had the absolute straightest delivery were Nolan Ryan and Greg Maddux. He said Greg Maddux could probably pitch 9 innings every 4 days and it wouldn't bother him, because he was straight. And same way with Nolan Ryan, who lasted for, you know, a long time. And
a long time. Yeah, I also Tom, I also remember an article that. That did some analysis, and this was way before we had a lot of great analytics capabilities. But this one looked at the number of innings pitched before the age of 25. The premise being that at 25 you are so much more physically mature than than you were as a younger pitcher. You just sort of fill out as an adult, and you're more ready. And that it looked at Nolan Ryan specifically and said Ryan, partly due to some injuries as a young man, but his number of innings before age 25 was limited. I don't think he ever exceeded 150.
He was a reliever for the Mets.
Looked at Dwight Gooden, who was young up and coming, and said Dwight Gooden is going to have arm troubles later in life, and Gooden, and so he might be on a fast track to 150 wins, but he probably won't see 200. And sure enough, that's the way it played out. Now, there were other things that contributed to Gooden's physical demise, part of that, a lot of that being related to drug abuse, too, But it was kind of an interesting look at it, and just said, how much do you pitch early, and that affects how long you'll pitch later.
By the way, real quick, I pulled up Mark Pryor. So Mark Pryor, I think the 2003 season is what really killed him. He threw 211 innings when he was 22 years old in the 2003 Cubs season, and that really hurt him. In college, he didn't pitch that much. His freshman year at Vanderbilt, he made 13 starts. Through 82 innings. His sophomore year at USC when he transferred, 19 starts, 136 innings. And his junior year, 18 starts, 138 innings. And then he was drafted.
Well, it's 138 innings in a 2 or 3 months. I guess it was really jammed into the playoff period.
Probably. It was 18 starts and 138 innings his junior year. Then he was drafted, and the Cubs shut him down. Chief's right, he didn't pitch anymore in 2001. And then 2002, he shot through the minor leagues. Through 34 innings with West Tennessee, 16 innings with the Iowa Cubs, so only 50 innings in the minor leagues, and then he threw 116 innings with the Cubs in 02. So that puts him at like 166, and then 03 he went 211, and then he never really pitched again.
Yeah.
he made a couple minor comebacks. 04 he pitched 118 innings, but he was basically done. In his career, he was 42-29 with a 3.5 ERA. It's really sad because he was really good.
Yeah. Well, Kerry Wood said
there was also speculation that PEDs were a factor there.
Speculation.
I don't know that. I don't know that that was ever confirmed, but in that era, everybody's suspect as far as I'm concerned. But one of the problems with PEDs is when you get off of them, you become injury prone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Are you going to game tomorrow?
Oh, no.
I didn't think so.
All-state game? No, that's definitely a recliner game.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you. We'll talk next week. SB Futures down 3, Dow Futures down 38, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Come back with Mr. Josh Nelson to see if he predicted all these surprise teams this year. I think he did. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 475, down on 53. NASDAQ down 15 and a quarter. The market has looked very heavy this week. That's a word term we used to use on the trading floor. Even though we come back in the afternoon, we're struggling to come back. And we've had the hits in the with all the people in front of Congress. Had some pretty reasonable hits and off the highs of the fangs. We're going to have Mr. Josh Nelson from Sox Machine Podcast. Josh, I have to ask you a very personal question. if you don't mind.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
Well, I'm going to ask it anyway, but if you do mind. Josh has been a very valued contributor. We love when he comes on, and he always comes on. And whenever we ask him, he's one of the greatest guys. Would you be more likely to come on or to actually get off the sofa and or out of the desk and come down to the office if we were to serve up some weed, either a marijuana down brownie, and say a nice big glass of Jack Daniels in the morning? Would you be more likely to be sitting across from me?
I don't know about those two, but if I get myself out of the bed earlier, yeah, I can come down to the studio. That's not a problem.
Elon Musk smokes weed, sips whiskey, and Joe Rogan's podcast. Who the hell is Joe Rogan? But obviously, he's serving it up, you know. So
yeah. Well, Joe Rogan, remember the what was that Fear show? Was it? It's called Fear Factor. If you remember Fear Factor, Joe was the host of that.
Really?
But for those that watch sports, Joe has been the color commentator for UFC, my gosh, more than a decade. And he's really knowledgeable about, as far as mixed martial arts and that type of setting as far as fighting in the
really?
UFC. So those are the two most popular. He has also one of the most popular podcasts out there as well.
And you get, well, how do I get to be a guest? If I'll lay off the weed, but I wouldn't mind the little Jack, you know. Just saying. You know, not about this hour in the morning, but so how are you, bud?
I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the races that are going on in Major League Baseball. I know the NFL got started yesterday.
Yep.
What a very thrilling game that was. But especially in the National League, if you are a fan of any team in the National League, this is going to be a dead heat all the way for the rest of the month of September. I think the postseason races have been settled in the American League for a while. I don't think we're going to see any changes in the playoff seedings with those five teams. But in the National League, I mean, right now you have the Colorado Rockies a game and a half up on the Dodgers. The Cubs do have some breathing room. They're 4.5 up on Milwaukee and 5 up on St. Louis. And Atlanta's up by 3.5 on Philadelphia. But if any of these teams have a bad week, it could really change on its head. And it'll be interesting to see on how this all plays out. So I'm pretty excited to see how the National League goes for the final 3 weeks of the season. Whereas in the American League, I think we're just ready to see these super matchups in the postseason.
What I keep prefacing when people ask me about the show and the sports, and I said, well, we got this guy. They predicted Atlanta and Oakland having a big year, and they go, who's that? Who's this guy, Josh? Because I think you did early on. I know you did Atlanta, and I think you did Oakland as well. When most people were like, type of thing. My question is to you, and this, I hope I'm jumping you here like I always do. What happens? This almost happened, was it last year, the year before? What happens if, say, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks tie for the thing, and oh, by the way, the two teams for the wild card like tie as well? How does that disgusting playoff going to work? I mean, is it a bunch of, be like 3-1 games in a row, or how does that even go?
Yep, it'd be a battle royale. All four teams will be playing at the same time. No, I'm kidding. First, you got to decide the division, because whoever wins the division gets the higher seed. So you have that one game 163. And then if the team that loses is still tied with the other teams, the wild card, then you enter in other game 163 situations as well.
All right, but now, okay, so the question I have, I'm always leading to something. That playoff, the two teams that win the division, they tie. That playoff is considered a league game, correct?
I don't know. Yes, it is considered a league game.
All right, so the team that wins that, if that puts them, say, half a game ahead of the wild card guy, does that mean they win? Or do they have to play them too? The loser. If the loser is now half a game behind the wild card person, is that considered they lost? Because they have the odd number game?
I don't think they're considered that as a loss.
Okay. So the only thing that makes it a league game is the stats count.
Right.
So the team would not be 81 and 82 and would lose to a team that's 81 and 81. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, that would be a mess, though, because they'd be flying back and forth from city to city on a daily basis, wouldn't they, pretty much?
Only you would ask these questions.
Well, I mean, it almost happened 2 years ago, didn't it?
The wild card team was even with the division
team?
No,
it was the two teams almost won the division in one area, and then one of them would have been the wild card team, and the other wild card team in the other division had almost the exact same record. It's like all three of them could have had the same record.
That's definitely possible.
It was pretty interesting how it all went out. And Josh, I think, is correct. First you decide who wins the division, then the other two guys have to go somewhere and play off as the two wild card teams. So you'd have 2 days in a row at least.
And okay, so this is how it works. According to Major League Baseball.com, their rule breaker, if you have four teams that are competing for three spots and two teams are competing for the division title, then the loser of the division title will play the loser of the final wild card spot. So you will have two game 163s that will happen at the same day. You will have the game to win the division and then the game to determine the other wild card. The loser of that wild card game will face the loser of the division game, and who wins that game will go to the postseason.
Okay, so it has to be different if the two division winners have a better record than the two guys tying for the wild card, because the guy who loses the division then would be the wild card if he had a better record.
Well, if they had better records going into the division, then whoever loses is going to be the wild card team and plays in the one game playoff. This is a scenario that if four teams have the same record at the end of the year. which is possible this year in the National League.
Wow. That'd be neat. I mean, there's actually enough slack in the playoffs, right? You get like a couple days before the playoffs start. So one team would have to play on a big serious game on Sunday, play Monday, play Tuesday, and probably start the playoffs on Wednesday. But they better have a good bullpen.
Well, not necessarily. The National League will start on Tuesday. The American League will start on Wednesday. So in the National League, the regular season final game is on Sunday, and Monday is designated for the tiebreakers.
Okay.
So if you got to play in a tiebreaker, after that tiebreaker game, if you are the wild card team, you got to prepare for a one-game playoff the next day.
But if there's a playoff to get there, they have to push the playoffs.
Yes. I'm sure Major League Baseball does not want to plan for that.
No.
Well, this would be a year where something like that could happen. I mean, just looking at the standings, if you have the Brewers, Cardinals, Rockies, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks, essentially five teams within 3.5 games of each other competing for three spots.
And so it
is sort of relevant, and that's not even factoring in the Phillies and Braves.
And that's assuming the Cubs stay above the fray, don't pile back.
Right, and yeah, exactly. Who knows?
Yeah, you got eight teams competing for five playoff spots. So,
Josh, one more.
It's going to be tight.
One more question from the people have been asking me, and then I'll let you and Maddie talk because you guys know more than I do. How did what's his name? The guy who used to be on the Pirates, McCutcheon, how did he get to the Yankees after the trade deadline from the other league?
So there's the non-waiver trade deadline, and then there is the waiver trade deadline. The non-waiver trade deadline that everybody knows is at the end of July, July 31st. The waiver trade deadline is at the end of August. This is also how Justin Verlander got to the Houston Astros. And what happens is that after July 31st, every team puts a number of guys on the waiver wire that could be claimed by other teams. And if you are claimed by another team, then only that team can negotiate a trade with the team that has that player. And with Andrew McCutcheon, he was placed on waivers. And when you clear waivers, when no team makes a claim on you, then you are available to be traded to any other team. That's just the difference between trading in August and in July. In July, you don't have to put a player on waivers, and you can trade them freely with any other team. In August, you can have teams like, rumored, the Baltimore Orioles, who are the worst team in Major League Baseball, but they were making claims on other players to either slow the process or prevent players to be traded to certain teams. So it's part of politics, I guess you can say, of Major League Baseball, that you can block teams from acquiring players. But if that player doesn't get a deal done with the other team, then eventually you could try again to get that player to clear waivers, and if they clear waivers, then you can trade them away.
Nobody
claimed McCutcheon, and the Giants were free. They could freely trade Andrew McCutcheon to any team, and that's when the Yankees decided that they needed another outfielder, and they traded for McCutcheon.
I don't know the personnel of these teams. How does all these teams in the playoff, how does nobody want McCutcheon? The guy was an all-star 2 years ago.
A lot of these postseason teams they've solidified as far as the outfield. They don't have any major issues at the moment because you have a pretty good idea on who's going to be in your 25-man roster. And if you don't think Andrew McCutcheon is an upgrade over what you currently have in the outfield, then I can understand where teams are not going to make that move. But for the Yankees, with Aaron Judge still out with that broken wrist, and it doesn't sound good coming out of New York as far as Judge rejoining the Yankees before the postseason. They needed help. They needed help in right field because they were playing guys like Neil Walker, who is a veteran, but he has zero outfield experience. And you can tell watching him try to snag fly balls or at least track deep drives in right field at Yankee Stadium. So I thought it was a good move by the Yankees. I think it's a good fit for Andrew McCutcheon. He'll become a free agent after the season. And we'll probably see Andrew McCutcheon in the postseason for the Yankees. And hopefully he can deliver for them because right now it looks like they're going to be in that one-game playoff. They'll host it at Yankee Stadium at home, but they'll be playing against the Oakland Athletics, and that will be a tough test.
What Do you have to do this before September 1st to be eligible for the playoffs or not?
Yes, yes. You got to do it before September 1st. August 31st, the end of August, is the deadline.
So you have to be in the 40-man roster August 31st, or you can't play in the playoffs. Is that true or no?
Right.
So
in order to be eligible for the postseason.
So even if somebody on the Cubs or anybody, I mean, anybody gets hurt, and you bring somebody from AAA for the 40-man, he's still not eligible for the playoffs.
Right. You got to be on the roster for a month.
The 40-man, not the 25. Or is it the is
correct?
It, okay.
Because after August 31st, then rosters expand.
Okay, but there's always this 40-man roster. That explain how that works, and then Matty, you can ask some questions. But how does what is the difference between the 40 and the 25?
So the 40-man roster is, so you got about 15 guys that are waiting, like, in the minor leagues. And this is a pretty lengthy topic because the 40-man roster impacts a lot of things as far as Major League Baseball. But when, say, you want to put a player on the 40-man roster because as a player accumulates time in the minor leagues, they can make themselves available in the Rule 5 draft. And the Rule 5 draft is where a team can draft a player that's currently in another team's minor league system because they've accrued time. And once you draft a player in the Rule 5 draft, you can put them on your 25-man roster. They must stay on the 25-man roster for a year. So the 40-man roster, one, is used to help protect players. So there's about 15 players that you have in the minor leagues that could be additional depth or players that you want to protect from being selected by other teams. You could place them on your 40-man roster, and then you can call them up, and you can option them out during the season. Even though you can only have 25 guys in your everyday lineup, you still have 15 guys that you can call up at any time, and you can option back down without having to put them on waivers or designate them for assignment or cut them or anything like that.
But the only time you have to pay them more,
you still have control.
The only time you have to pay them more is the day they're actually here, right?
You purchase their contract, so the guys on the 40-man roster get paid more than the guys who are not.
But I'm saying when they come, if they spend one day at Wrigley Field, you get the major league minimum for that day.
Yes, that is correct.
And then you go back to AAA, you're back to the AAA thing.
That's correct.
Okay.
So everyone in White Sox land is obviously talking about Eloy.
Yes.
And I know you have strong thoughts on this because I follow you on Twitter and I listen to the podcast, which is terrific, by the way, the Sox Machine podcast that Josh does. Having sort of gone through this with Chris Bryant, not to the same extent, but very similar when he was clearly ready and the Cubs, you know, held him down for obvious reasons and basically didn't say why they were doing it, but everyone knew that why they were doing it. The White Sox are doing a similar thing. I understand it, and, you know, not that I agree with it, but I understand it. What are your thoughts on it, and why are you so strongly against what the White Sox are doing?
Well, for Eloy Jimenez, I think this is the worst thing about baseball, is service time manipulation. And my feelings about Eloy Jimenez specifically, because my feelings change a little bit when it comes to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and I feel a lot strongly against on what the Minnesota Twins are doing with Byron Buxton. I think for the White Sox, they need to do whatever it takes to help their team win in 2020 and 2021. And I feel that if you give Eloy Jimenez the month of September to prove if he's ready for the major leagues, gives you enough understanding of how good of a team you could be in 2019. And the reason why I think that's important is that this is a very strong free agency class. This may be a class of players that the White Sox would want to spend money with. But if you're not going to truly find out on how good of a team you are by not calling up Eloy Jimenez, I just don't know why the White Sox would spend money in this offseason on this free agency class, just because I don't think anybody, including the White Sox, know on how good they are. They've had a good 40-game stretch. They've been really good after the All-Star break. But come on, I mean, there's a lot of guys on this team right now that are not going to be part of a contender in the next couple of years. And you always had the option that if you called up Eloy Jimenez in September and he wasn't good, that he struggled to adjust to Major League pitching, well, you still have the option of starting 2019 with him in the minor leagues and you can call him up after the Super 2 deadline in June, and then if he's ready to go, then you can just play him out the rest of the year. So that's the way that I would have preferred the White Sox to play it. And I just, the things that Rick Hahn has been saying, like he needs to check off the boxes and he needs to work on his defense. I mean, come on, Rick, you're not fooling anyone. You're kind of making yourself look like an idiot, honestly. And that's why I felt strongly against them, what the White Sox were doing with Eloy Jimenez. But again, I do understand, like, the extra year control could be very beneficial. However, in the White Sox current situation, you do have an owner that's 82 years old. You do have a general manager who is working on his sixth consecutive losing season. The White Sox haven't made the postseason in 10 years. Patience is starting to run out. I mean, you got maybe another year. 2019 can be a losing season, but the vast majority of the fan base is expecting a winning team in 2020. So if you're not building towards that, what exactly are you doing? Now, the Blue Jays with Vlad Guerrero Jr., Vlad Guerrero Jr. had an outstanding season. He's 19 years old. I can understand why the Blue Jays would not want to call him up and say, well, it's an age thing. We just don't feel like he's mature enough to handle Major League Baseball, even though I think that's crap because Juan Soto is having such a terrific year for the Washington Nationals, and he's 19 years old. And then what the Twins are doing with Byron Buxton. Byron Buxton and his agents need to file a grievance against the Twins, and I hope they win. Because you can't have a guy who starts 2 years for you, who plays multiple games hurt at the beginning of the year, to try to help your team be a playoff contender. The reason you made the playoffs last year is because Byron Buxton got hot in the second half, and he could be one of your most valuable players. And when he's rehabbing, and it seems like he's getting back on track, you can use the last month of the season to get him back on track at the major league level, and you decide, no, we're not going to do that, and you openly admit that you're manipulating his service time. So yeah, Byron Buxton and his agents need to file a grievance against the Twins, because every single one of these younger players needs to understand that any team, if you get hurt, looks like that they're going to try to manipulate service time, and even though you have played two full major league seasons, they will perhaps try to find a way to keep you in the minor leagues to force you to, or at least to obtain that extra year of control. I think what the Twins are doing with Byron Buxton is absolute crap. I can understand what the White Sox are doing with Eloy Jimenez, even though I don't think it's the right route. And with the Toronto Blue Jays and Vlad Guerrero Jr., I also disagree with that, but I can understand that if they're using age as a factor, that, yeah, most 19-year-olds are not ready for Major League Baseball.
You're not to mention the part that if you are one of the lovable losers that has a skybox or something at Sox Park, and you finally could have a reason where you might actually be able to get 15 people who want to go to a game that you've already paid for, you might be able to say, this guy's playing tonight, how about we go to a game for the first time this year? Well, you probably went through it.
Right,
just saying.
That's a great point, because when, like, Kopech pitches, the park is relatively full, and it's electric, and people want to be there, and it would be like that on steroids if Eloy was called up.
That's right. I mean, at some point, it's one thing if you, let's put it this way, how can I explain it? It's one thing if you decide not to do it and give up the walk-up crowd. It's quite another if you're sitting there holding four tickets, and they say, nah, the entertainment could be a lot better tonight, but screw you, which is essentially what they're saying. But I don't know. Josh, what do you think the White Sox season ticket load is down to?
5,000.
Really?
I think that's the last number I heard, was 5,000.
And it was, where do you think it was at the top, 18?
Oh, I don't think it was ever that high. Maybe 10,000? I don't know. I'd have to ask a sales guy, but I know right now it's about 5,000.
Because, I mean, they have all those packages.
In 06, I bet it was pretty high.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was very high.
You know, I mean, they sold out relatively every game. They everyone was buying tickets. But yeah, 5,000, that's rough.
Yeah.
And I love arguing with season ticket holders, because they're like, there's a lot of us. No, there's not. I'm sorry, there's not, and a lot of your 5,000 are bots. Because if you go to SeatGeek and StubHub or any third ticket party, when you buy those tickets, it'll just say that it's like a broker or an automated service. So I don't know how many humans own season tickets for the Chicago White Sox, but the season ticket load last I heard was 5,000.
I'm going to say that you learn when you're doing your podcast, as I do, it's not what you say, it's what people hear, Josh. And
that is true.
It's so true.
And I'm going to say I have three friends that own a quarter of a share or a fifth of a share of season tickets for the Sox, they will all consider themselves season ticket holders. So if four people share that 5,000, you're going to have 20,000 people say, yes, I'm a season ticket holder.
And I will say maybe 30 to 40% of those are bots for the ticket brokers.
Well, I mean, I know a bunch of people down in the exchange area that have that have had the tickets for a long time and just have. There's all kinds of people that they split them up. Everybody gets 5 or 8 or 10 games.
Yeah, yeah.
We only have a couple.
You know,
yeah,
go ahead, Josh.
No, I was gonna say that's fair.
Yeah, we only have a couple minutes left, so I wanted to just ask two quick questions. One is I want Josh's prediction on how the playoffs are going to shake up here. With three weeks left in the season. But real quick, why is Carlos Rodon so good all of a sudden? He looks great.
Yeah, I mean, for Carlos Rodon, he's always had this potential. The big change for him, he's throwing his changeup more often, Matt. And right now, hitters cannot square up that pitch. They're not hitting it very hard for contact, and it's allowed him to reduce his home run fly ball rate, which is very important for Carlos Rodon. As far as the fastball, it would be nice to see him change up as far as his velocity, where he's throwing a little bit faster and he's missing a little bit more bats. But right now he's been throwing the change up more often, and it's inducing a lot of weak contact. And the White Sox, especially in the infield with Tim Anderson and Yomer Sanchez at shortstop and third base, have been playing very good defenses of late. So I think that combination is why Carlos Rodon has been pitching a lot better for the White Sox, and he'll be on the mound tonight against the Angels, a team that he's been very good against, especially at home. So it'll be interesting to see on how well Rodon pitches tonight. As far as the postseason, again, I don't think anything changes in the American League in order 1 through 5. Boston, Houston, Cleveland, and the Yankees and the Athletics will play the one-game playoff in New York. In the National League, I think the Cubs will be the number one team. I'm going to surprise people. I'm going with the Rockies. I am on the Rockies bandwagon.
Wow.
I think they'll be the number two seed, and I think they will win the National League West. Atlanta will win the National League East. They'll be the 3 seed, and your one-game playoff will be between Milwaukee and St. Louis.
Oh, that'd be neat.
The winner of that team will face the Cubs.
No Dodgers.
That'd be neat. Dodgers out, eh?
No Dodgers. I just don't have a good feeling. Kenley Jensen, obviously with his heart issue, is a problem, and without him, the Dodgers are having a very difficult time closing out games. They have bullpen issues offensively. I just don't trust that team, despite the moves that they have made, adding Manny Machado and Brian Dozier. The Rockies are hot, and we've seen this before in September, and the Rockies have a very strong bullpen that's been pitching a lot better as of late, and Trevor Story is starting to heat up and being able to support Nolan Arenado. So that's why I'm going with the Rockies to win the West.
So real quick,
love it.
Moro, not a fatal wound on the Cubs, and promote your podcast.
Yes, you can find us at SoxMachine.com, the Sox Machine podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, Google, and Google Podcasts.
So Moro, not a fatal wound if he doesn't come back for the Cubs?
Moro on the fatal wound?
No,
who's
no.
Player?
Brandon Morrow for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Is he dead?
We'll see. I don't know. He's had so many injuries, Chief. I'm not sure. Right now, with the way the injuries have been for the Cubs, they haven't been lucky with injuries this year. My gut says they're going to try in the final week of September. We may see him for the Cubs and White Sox, but if he doesn't pitch well, they're going to go another direction.
April Jabs report up 201. Dow futures or SP futures down 750. We'll be right back. Thank you, Josh. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Jan Neal and he's Mr. Matt Weber. SPP is down on 10, down on 91. We've got the NASDAQ down 40. We just had the jobs numbers come out, 201 versus the 191. 3.9 versus people thinking we're going to go to 3.8 on the unemployment. We did not. 62.7 is the participation rate. The big number is wage growth up to 0.4%, which is a recent high. However, and there's always a however, Eddie, last month was reduced down to 208 from 248. In July was reduced down to 147 from 157. So we were 10,000 over the estimation, and we dropped 50 in the 2 months before. So, but I'm going to say the 0.4% hourly wage growth, which if you multiply it by 12, which you can't because it hasn't been this one for a while, it'd be 4.8. I still don't think that's going to meet inflation this year, but still, I'd like, it's a good number to see, the 0.4%, is I think we've seen some people, especially at the lower end, having to pay 12 bucks instead of 10 to get somebody in their place. I mean, I'm seeing that everywhere from people I talk to. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX still down 26.2%, FTSE down 71, that's a full 1% now. CAC around down 10.2%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 180.8%, Shanghai up 10.4%, they leaked back over 2,727.02, Hang Seng down 135, so they could not make it back over 27,000, 26,973. I said before, oil was up 5 cents, it was up 15 cents earlier. Brent up 25 cents, natural gas 2.77 stuck there, RBOB 1.96, and we've got gold is now up 229, it's up a little bit since this job report came up. Silver 0.4 cents is up. So Maddie, pretty confusing report. We're going to have Carl Denninger on next Wednesday for a whole hour, second half of the show, to go through these numbers because we really didn't go through them heavy with him last month. But 200,000 is about the neutral number. So it's an okay number, it's a good number, but it's about the neutral number, I think. But we'll zero that in with Carl next Wednesday. Maddie, what do you got for us?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Earlier crash out in Naperville on I-88 is all clear, so that's good news. No resulting congestion from that. The rest of the expressways are looking pretty good. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet. No accidents or issues to report. Normal traffic volumes. Still no rain, although it's looking ominous out there. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but relatively normal for a Friday morning. Same with the Kennedy and Edens. We do have a fire on the south side. It's actually right by where my grandfather used to run a store. 79th and Yates is closed due to a serious fire. A 3-alarm fire at 7901 at South Phillips. a residential building, multiple ambulances responding, reports that people needed to be rescued.
That's near University of Chicago.
Yep. That area is all closed due to that fire, so keep that in mind if you're traveling down there. Everything else looking okay out there, weather today. Mild temperatures, cloudy skies, rain in the area on and off throughout the day, a high of 70, which is where we're at right now, cloudy and 70. So we'll stay right here with lots of humidity in the air, but mild temperatures. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today, sunny with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 86. In sports, Cubs with a nice win last night in 10 innings, coming from behind to beat the Nationals. 6-4 was the final. They gain a half game on Milwaukee and St. Louis, who are both off. So the Cubs are 4.5 up on the Brewers.
I thought they putzed it when, got picked off second.
Yeah, 5 up on the Cardinals. White Sox were off last night. As Josh mentioned, they welcomed the L.A. Angels to town. So if you want to see Ohtani, you got a chance to do it this weekend on the South Side. Diamondbacks lost a tough one to Atlanta, and the Diamondbacks are struggling right now. They lose to the Braves 7-6 in 10 innings, and the Diamondbacks find themselves in third place now in the NL West after they've led that division the majority of the season. They're a game behind the Dodgers, and they're 2.5 behind Colorado, who Josh thinks is going to run away with this thing in the National League West. So the Diamondbacks need to get it going. Because they're, as far as the wild card is concerned, they're 3 back of the Cardinals, so they have a better chance of winning their division than winning the wild card right now. Lastly, Thursday Night Football, the NFL season kicked off last night, and it was a close game, sloppy and boring for the most part, but it got exciting at the end. Eagles topped the Falcons at home 18-12. Chief.
So what are you doing? What about the Chicago area river levels when they're all in flood stage? Aren't you supposed to be adding that to your report?
No, that doesn't, unless it affects traffic.
Oh, all right. Well, it affects, if you had a saloon on the Fox River, it would be affecting traffic because nobody would be able to take their boat to your place.
That's true.
These guys had all this problem all the way through June, and now they got it again. This has to be the world's crummiest year if you got a bar or restaurant in any of these rivers. They've been like unpassable the whole summer. So, John, how are you, bud? You don't have to worry about any stinking.
Oh, good, yourself.
All right, you don't have to worry about any stinking rivers in Arizona. You guys got none.
No, we've got a few, but they're pretty dry this time of year.
Yeah, well, is it a river? Is the river still a river with no water in it?
At that, good question.
Yeah, that's like one of those is the tree fall in the forest and nobody's there to come make it found.
But. I think you call it a wash, right? It's a sometime river. When it rains, yeah. It's a river, and after that, it's nothing. What do you make of all these numbers? We're trying to digest them here on this end. I think we're going to find that, I think, I'm not speaking for the man, Carl's going to come out and say, we've been averaging 190 to 200,000 for the last 5 years, 6 years, that nothing's really changed, and it's just keeping up with the demographics, and maybe a little ahead of the demographics, but that's kind of about it. It hasn't really changed. Has gotten a lot of people off the sofa. It's causing a little bit of a competition on the lower end in terms of, you might have to pay $12.50 at the Menards and not $10, which is a good thing. So we're seeing a little competition, John. And I think
the numbers
are positive, but it's not, it's a long evolved thing. It's not, President Big Bazoo, saying he did it all himself. I mean, it's been going on really since 2009, which is positive. I mean, I think.
Yeah, this has been a long process. Nobody can lay claim to this. I mean, as far as this happening, so you're absolutely correct.
What do you mean? You can lay claim to anything. Phoenix rose from the ashes.
Well, I guess you could lay claim to it. Now, whether that's true or not is another thing. Sorry, stand corrected.
I thought that Amazon went through $1 trillion because John Neal recommended it.
I'm telling you. That would be why. All right.
Yeah. See, you gotta trumpet your own horn a little more, you know. It's not like the people around us aren't big with trumpets. They're big with trumpets.
Yeah, there's trumpets everywhere. I just thought I'd be a little bit different, though.
I think we all are. But what do you, we're starting to see a little bit of a perky head out of gold a little bit, which I'm happy to see. What do you make of oil ducking back down again? I still think what's going on in Venezuela and Iran, much as I hate to see it, I honestly do believe we're going to see $85 oil. You and I, John, I think agree that the untouched world price of oil is about $55, maybe $52, somewhere in there. But it's not untouched.
Right.
Everybody's messing with Iran. Venezuela has messed with themselves. That's a lot of stuff off the market. if you know if they really.
Yeah, no, I'm you know I'm still you know involved in the oil positions just like you are. Not even a thought to expose and you know the way we're hedging them and things like that. And I agree with you. There's enough mid-50s. You know, so there's nothing going on in the world, and then you know you get the you know 80, 85. Yeah, I agree with that, Tom. I wouldn't be surprised at all, to be honest.
I have a real... I'm going to drop this one on you because I know you probably have not done the research, but you may know more than me. I just caught this headline this morning about Jack Ma contemplating life after whatever the place is. I thought that when that place was set up, all the... I'll use the term corporate property, the actual property, actually went to him personally. And that what you get from... owning the stock is an income stream out of Bermuda. Now, am I wrong? Now, how the hell can the man leave if he owns everything? Or what am I missing here? Or is this above my pay grade?
Good question. I honestly don't know, and I've heard things like that too, Tom. So I'm not sure the answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, how the hell do you how do you dash if you own the place? I mean, how it was ever listed? I have no idea. I mean, at that I can't even begin to. It says here,
right.
Billionaire Jack Ma prepares for life after Alibaba. It's only been like, what, 3 years, 4 years the thing's been listed? Is it even that long?
Yeah, that's what I remember hearing about it, is maybe 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, and I think the setup is that all the corporate assets went to him personally, or his own company, and that everybody else gets the income stream out of Bermuda. Or someplace down there, Caymans or some damn place. And that's why when I went on the New York Stock Exchange, I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody has any voting rights. Nobody has anything. How the hell is this thing even listed? I mean, the New York Stock Exchange would never have listed that 30 years ago. And yet, you know, you can't wait to get the business. So they're on there being listed. And now, what happens if he leaves? Who gets all his stuff? Or does he take it with him?
I guess he moves to Belize and, you know, becomes some sort of a you know real estate guy. Period. You know.
Have you had any clients that have either came to you, joined up with a bunch of Alibaba stock, or said, "John, what do you think about me putting $100,000 in Alibaba?" Thank God I have not. I don't know what I'd say. I'm thinking.
No, I mean I had some people just have some really you know small positions. You know, we're talking about you know, just 30, 40 shares if they just play with a little bit, you know what I mean?
Okay, well, I mean, that's, yeah.
Just things like that is all I've ever done with that stock.
Well,
and to take that a step further, is that kind of goes with a lot of these, you know, mainland, you know, Chinese companies. I think it, you know, bears being ultra-conservative, you know, playing those because there isn't a lot of, it's hard to get good, accurate facts on those, Tom, man. It's problematic with that type of thing.
Why do you, this is not a shot at any company. I just, as you know, John, I like to look at things that seem like they don't match up. How is it that we are seemingly on one level of the chessboard, we're fighting this battle with China, and we don't seem to care? I mean, on the verbal end of it, you know, they're the biggest no-goodniks that ever lived. And, you know, a big chunk of that's true. I'm not denying that. But how do you, how are we going to be so surgical where we're going to send our nastiest, no longer buddies, even though the president and Z are, you know, like white and rice, which I don't know if I'd buy for a second. But how are we going to put these guys down a rat hole and not send Baidu and Apple down a rat hole with them? How are these two unaffected if we actually do what we say we're going to do?
Right. It's almost like we're not we, but it's almost like he is kind of just picking and choosing who to pick on, if you will. So, it's very tough, Tom, and these aren't tradable things. And we've seen some very unusual volatility because of these kind of things, and it's a lot of craziness.
Well, it's like a rainstorm. You can't trade it, but it's tough to drive through it. Right?
Well, exactly.
exactly.
I mean, I find this stuff, I mean, it's really hard to be doing, selecting your hedges, doing your stuff, and when all this stuff is flying at you all day long. I mean, it's, because you think, I'm starting to hear a lot of people talking about in specific industries now, these tariffs are causing a lot of price increases. It wouldn't surprise me at all, John, even with our, I'm going to say, lying sack of bleep people from the Labor Department, for us to get a 1% number on the CPI one of these months. I mean, we have to. I mean, there's people that are saying their steel prices are up 40%. I mean, in these things. I mean, how, and some of these other prices, where the other stuff we put tariffs on it, maybe people are using the excuse, you know, whatever. I mean, how we don't have that somehow registered the rise in lumber prices because of our lumber tariffs of the last however many years. Somehow or another, people keep saying the lumber isn't going up, but it sure has. If this keeps happening, do we think that our steel companies have used this just an excuse to raise prices? Are they making capital commitments? Are they 3 years from now when it's all over, hopefully, that they have a brand new steel plant that can compete at the old price? Or are we taking it to salary and bonus? Or what are we doing with this stuff? Or don't we care?
It's anybody's guess. That's the problem. We don't know the answer to those questions. And that's the biggest part of the problem.
Well, Josh, just put your Diamondbacks in a out. So what do you think of that? He's got the racket.
Well, they've definitely, starting to fade a bit. They'll have to get it back on track here pretty soon. I agree with Matt. The way in, obviously, is to win that division versus, you know, being a wild card at this point in time.
Well, Josh has has the
Rockies. That series would be pretty tough.
You say he has the Rockies in. He's got the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers on the outside looking in, and he's got the Cardinals Brewers doing the one-game playoff.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It would be unprecedented, though. The Rockies right now are 77-62, 15 games above 500, which is a terrific record. But they've been outscored on the season. Their run differential is -8. Meanwhile, the Dodgers are a game and a half behind the Rockies. Their run differential is +129. So the Rockies are squeaking by a lot of one-run wins, that would lead you to believe. And when they lose, they're getting killed. And yet they're in first place. That very rarely happens that way.
Yeah.
Usually your best teams have a huge run differential. Right now, the best run differentials in baseball are the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Astros, the Indians, the Cubs, and the Dodgers. And yet the Dodgers might not make the playoffs.
Well, did they ever find a replacement for that shortstop that's decent? They traded for somebody, didn't they?
Yeah, they got Manny Machado from the Orioles.
Well, that'll work.
Arguably the best one in the game.
Is he a decent fielder, too?
Yeah. He's not as good as Baez defensively, or certainly, you know, can't quite cover as much ground, but he's that type of player where he's got power, he hits for average, he does everything, plays defense.
So why are they not going to make it? They have the biggest payroll, or
they've had some injuries. Obviously, you mentioned their shortstop, but they've had other guys too. And then their closer, their dominant closer, Kenley Jensen, has been hurt, and that's hurt them. And then they're just having a down year. I mean, they're still 12 games above 500, and they still have a chance. They're only a game and a half back, but they were certainly the heavy favorites, just like the Nationals were in the East. And both those teams, unsuspectedly, are having down years. And the Nationals down enough where they traded a bunch of guys.
I still look at the Nationals lineup, and one of those two guys is pitching and wonder, what the hell?
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. It's absolutely crazy.
Well, I think that one guy, like I said, I don't want him on our team.
Talking about Bryce Harper?
Yeah, I think he's an issue. I don't know why I shouldn't jump to conclusions that quickly, but
he's a pretty good player. I mean, he's a great player, obviously, and he's young. He's going to command a lot of money. I don't know. He plays with sort of a flamboyance that a lot of people don't like. But I don't mind that.
Sort of like Thomas.
Yeah, except a little bit better.
Yeah, well, you know, he played shortstop in left field last Sunday.
That's a sign of not a very good pickup game if Thomas is playing shortstop in left field.
Well, the left fielder had to leave for an inning to go home. One of his little girls had to go to the bathroom, so he had to go home for an inning and came back. As soon as he did, they had threw Thomas out of there. But he wears the shirt, the uniform, so people think he's good.
He definitely dresses the part.
Yes.
Which is good.
John, would you dress the part and make everybody think you're a Yankee retiree or something if we brought you out?
Oh, you know, I would do it for fun. Absolutely. Why not?
Your buddy Todd was the best, man. Years ago, we needed a guy just to catch. He immediately goes to the then whatever the sports store was. He comes out in pinstripes and in a jersey. He looked like he was on the Yankees. I mean, Todd. Anyway, but
he looked the part. He probably spent $200. Got spikes. Got a jersey. Got pants.
Well, Jan, the market is not reacting all that well to. I got the spoos down 850. Anything in this report tradable? I don't see. The only thing is the inflation numbers got to start creeping up a little bit if these wages are. Now you and I have had it creeping up for a while anyway, but I think the official number might actually creep up now. What do you think that means? I mean, the Fed is already claiming that I don't think they changed their raising the rates. Now, whether they actually raise the rates this time or just say they are and pay banks more money.
Right.
We'll see.
Well, you know, I mean, we would expect that, that inflation to creep up a little bit, and you know, hopefully that would also, you know, affect our precious metal plays, Tom. So we'll see what happens. You know,
what about this week? We've seen a dip in the FANGs, and yesterday we got Micron got whacked by about 10%. Is there a place here we should be? I mean, it's not like you know. Amazon's under 2,000. It's a screaming buy at 19.8. Let's not go there with the Amazon. But what about like a Micron or even when Facebook? You know, I don't know.
Funny, it's funny you say that. I towards the end of yesterday put on added. I had some Micron for some folks, and I added to those positions. Looks like it's going to take a little bounce here. You know, I reached some support levels, so. Towards the end of yesterday, I added to Micron a little bit, and I think some of these are little buying opportunities or places to add into existing conditions. I'm more doing the individual stocks versus that FANG index now, kind of picking and choosing. Micron was one, and Square is another one. There's a few little ones that I'm playing individually.
Well, I don't have anybody in the protected program with Micron. I've never really had. It's not a really widely held stock in this area, Jan, so I've never really had anybody come in with that in their portfolio. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, people that have other stuff. I mean, we got people with 3M and Exxon and stuff, but haven't really had, it's not a big widely held stuff in the Chicago area for some reason. I would think you maybe have more of it than I do, but if you had it, it would be a great morning, or actually yesterday afternoon, to roll the puts down, bought in your short calls, probably nothing, and to do some kind of repair strategy going back up. I mean, it would have been a nice day to maneuver in there, where if it bounced back up, you could make out like a bandit. But again, that's, you know, that's not for people to do at home. That's for us to do. But that would be
right.
That would
right.
Be a
yeah.
Day.
Right. No question. And in this case, I got some long term, you know, holds on that thing, and use it as an opportunity to add to that position too. If it's nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you definitely want to. By rolling your put down, you essentially get longer, which you really do add to the position even without doing anything.
Right.
And that's, you know, you get dealt a longer. Now, adding to it on top of that. But, yeah, some of these stocks are, yeah, it's hard to figure out where the real numbers are on these things, John, because if the Fed actually does start draining some money out, and we have some problem, you know, in one of these other countries, I hope they're only 5% too high and not 25. I mean, but how do I know? I don't think it's 25, but I think it's a little more than 5. Everybody else keeps saying it is.
Right. Yeah. And who knows? But I will tell you this is that, you know, I'm preparing my people and, you know, we're not married to any of this stuff, you know, so, but, you know, and look at these as not long term holds, but it's just, you know, tradable assets right now. And then, I'm ready to get out of them when the time is right, or when the time is wrong, how you look at it.
You know what we did new this week, Manny, which we do every year, and we're going to put John on the spot here? We didn't do our Bears picks.
Well, we have time. We have about 70 seconds.
But, I mean, I'm going to say, I haven't done this in the Bears in a while, I'm going to say 500.
8-8.
Yeah.
I'm going to lock you in at 8-8.
But where's Shanny? Will Shanny be like what?
Well, you're going to have to get
14-2.
What you're going to have to do is get the rest of them via email today, because we have to get them today, because they start obviously on Sunday. Sunday Night Football, 7:20 p.m. Chicago time kickoff versus the Packers, which will be excellent.
And are you saying
NBC
that our
crew will be there?
Are you saying that our creatures would lob their prediction after the first game?
Of course, of course they would. I'm going to do you better. I think the Bears are going to go 10-6 this year, and that's probably the most optimistic I've ever been on the Bears. And I'll probably be dead wrong. And when they're 5-11 and their whole team's injured and Trubisky sucks, then I'll sound like an idiot.
You know what? I was very close to 9-7.
Lock me in at 10-6. Chiefs at 8-8. John, you want to throw a Bears prediction out there?
I'm going to go 6-10. Sorry.
6-10 is probably, I think they're over under in Vegas is 5.5. So.
Really? Even with this new guy?
Well, that was before the new guy, but yeah, that's that. We'll lock you in, John, at 6-10. We're gonna have to get the rest via email.
Yeah, I'll send it out to these guys and not let them sandbag us. John, thank you very much. S&P futures still down 9. Be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.